I call the House Transportation Committee to order. Time is 1:03 p.m., Tuesday, April 2nd. Legislators present are Representative Tallarico, Representative Drummond, Representative Klayman, Co-Chair Stutes, and Representative Happy Birthday Story. And as we start, remember, silence your cell phones, which we say all the time, which never really comes up. I'd like to thank Doug Bridges, the moderator, and Julie Bushman, our recording secretary. And the committee staff is Ann Ritgers over here. If you have any communication, present it to Ann. For anyone in the committee, today we'll be hearing HJR 12 and also a presentation from the United States Coast Guard. First up is HJR 12, supporting the completion of the Northern Rail Extension, supporting the increase in defensive capabilities at Fort Greely, Alaska, and encouraging the development of critical Arctic infrastructure, sponsored by Representative Tallarico, if he could take the chair, with his staff, Tom Stubler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair, and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I'm Dave Tallarico, the representative for District 6, and along with me is Tom Stubler. And I'll just get right into it, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
House Joint Resolution 12 is a resolution encouraging the completion of the Northern Rail Extension to Fort Greely and Delta Junction, which would support military operations, mining, agriculture in the interior of Alaska. So we have quite a bit of history on this. In the Act of 1914, Congress authorized the construction of a railroad in Alaska. Railroad was to connect one or more open harbors in Alaska with the interior, help develop agriculture, mineral resources, and the settlement of people on public lands. It would provide transportation of fuels for the military, transporting troops, arms, munitions, the mail, and other governmental and public uses. Unfortunately, that wasn't entirely completed. The Alaska Railroad Transfer Act in 1983, Congress had recognized the importance of the railroad in providing freight and passenger rail service to Alaska. They also found that the continuation of services and the expansion of those services are necessary to achieve federal, state, and private objectives. The state's continued operation, together with expansion of the railroad, constitutes an appropriate public use of the rail system. Once again, the expansion didn't happen. In 2013, almost 100 years later, the Northern Rail expansion was proposed by the Alaska Railroad in conjunction with the Department of Defense. The fourth phase plan was completed. Phase one, crossing the Tanana River, there was a four-phase plan. Phase one, crossing the Tanana River, was completed, and there is a bridge near Salcha that actually spans the Tanana River for the rail extension. The remaining three phases need to be accomplished before we can realize the completion of the Northern Rail expansion. With the expansion of the Fort Greely Missile Complex and the expanded training ranges, increased agriculture in Delta Junction, and increased mining operations in the area, this resolution would support critical infrastructure to help develop all of that. It would certainly help our national security expansion and infrastructure, economic development, natural resource development throughout the state of Alaska. The Northern Rail Extension Project would provide essential freight and passenger service to support transportation and mobility needs of the region. I would also like to note, and I think this is very interesting, that we've actually have this in statute in Article 7 of our statutes. It'd be Section 42-40-550. It's extension of railroad to Fort Greeley. And within statute, it says a corporation may acquire a transportation corridor between the existing railroad corridor and Fort Greeley, Alaska, and construct a rail line within the corridor, provide rail service to the Fort Greeley area and points between. Transportation corridor may be designated for a use identified under AS 4240-350B and other transportation and utility uses. Corporation may also acquire land along the corridor for use as a rail land that can be developed for a terminal, station, maintenance facilities, switching yards, and any other purposes associated with the railroad utility corridor. So this certainly isn't a new plan at all. In fact, in our research of this, the act back in 1914 authorized the President of the United States to build 1,000 miles of rail line. We have, I believe, 400, and Tom can probably correct me, I think it's about 470 miles, 467 miles of rail line. So even back in 1914, I think they were really considering having extended rail. And I think you're all probably aware that my request here is really has a lot to do with national security. The expansion of the infrastructure of Fort Greely is very significant down at Delta Junction. And there'll be a lot of additional movement, a lot of different freight. And, of course, the advantages for our agriculture folks down there and just the transport, a secondary transportation corridor back and forth between Fort Greely and Delta Junction and Fairbanks, I think, would be pretty substantial. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we are ready for some questions.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. A question from Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Through the chair, I'm wondering, what is the distance that from where it ends now to where Fort Greely?
It's about 70 miles, or maybe just a little more than 70 miles. The rail does extend all the way to Eielson Air Force Base from Fairbanks. So when it gets up to its northernmost point, and then it heads due east, I should say southeast, really. Head southeast down through North Pole, beyond North Pole, and right into Eielson Air Force Base. And it was at that point near Salcha, phase one of the project, they actually built a bridge across the Tanana River, so they would go back to the, it would be the south side of the Tanana River to head down to Fort Greely. And that bridge project was completed about 4 years ago. It was $184 million project that they finished in phase one. One of the big obstacles was to get back across the Tanana River. So the bridge is there.
Follow up. Thank you. Through the chair. So everything's ready to go except they just need to lay down the railroad tracks?
I think they still, there was an EIS developed that we just found. Actually, we had asked about that, and we had been told by someone, no, there wasn't one, but we found one this morning. They had done an EIS process already. So they still, of course, have to build up the bed for the rail and everything and get the railroad tracks out there, but the route has already been identified, and I think everybody thought the major obstacle a few years ago was actually that Tanana River Bridge, which is a pretty enormous span. It's a pretty big bridge now that the bridge is across. So they have a route developed. They'd already done an EIS on the right-of-way, and so they're at that stage. So it's kind of we've finished phase one, and now we want to do two, three, and four.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much is the railroad being used today between Fairbanks and Eielson? Do they down there with some frequency?
Mostly Eielson. Eielson has a coal-fired power plant, and so they take coal out there. You would think I might know this off the top of my head. I do believe that they go out there twice a week with coal trains and take loaded coal trains out and then pick up the empties and bring them back.
All right. So follow up.
Yep. I'm sorry. Through the chair, Representative Clayman, they also haul some jet fuel out to Eielson.
Well, it's somewhat reassuring. Unlike the rail terminal at the Anchorage Airport, it sounds like the rails are actually getting used, and not very often we would see trains go to that train depot at the airport. And what's the second query is, what does the railroad estimate the cost per mile to construct new tracks?
It's kind of a wide range. They give a window due to the nature of what the ground might be, but it could be as much as $8 million
and a mile.
Be as low as $3 million. Yeah, so it's somewhere in that $3 to $8 million range. Yeah.
Follow up,
Representative Clemmie.
When we right now we don't have the funds to pay for the extension.
No, that through the chair, that's correct. Yeah, this is really a request. A request to the federal government with some of the recent budgetary things that they did with infrastructure money. I was kind of hoping that we might be able to get this to our congressional delegation and see if some of that infrastructure money might be available for us, in particularly with if we can get support of the Department of Defense to do that.
And one last area. In the newspaper, there's all this report about somebody that wants to put $17 billion to try to run rail from the tar sands in Canada into Alaska, how does that proposal fit in with this rail extension?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I believe that would just be a connection at wherever the rail stopped in Delta. If we had the ability to actually expand this down to Fort Greeley, then they would connect in at that point. And I do believe that their $17 billion estimate was actually to run all the way to Eielson Air Force Base. So if this was actually put in there, it may be a little bit less, probably not a lot, but somewhat less.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. I had the pleasure of traveling to Delta last summer with Representative Tallarico and Representative Tarr and Representative Rauscher and Senator Schauer. It was the first legislative farm tour those folks had seen since 1984. And one of the things that I learned was that they could sure use an alternative form of transportation. Because, man, I don't want to offend anybody, but I sure wouldn't wish driving on the Richardson Highway on a regular basis all the way to South Central on anybody. So I absolutely saw the need for this. And this is approximately 80 miles total, all the three phases. Am I reading this right?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And I actually had the same question as Representative Klayman regarding the connection to Alberta. What are they building for $17 billion? That sounds like half a gas line to me. And if this is only 3 to 8 million, only 3 to 8 million a mile, seems to me if I'm doing the math right, $600 million would get us about 80 miles. Is that right? Maximum?
600.
Roughly?
Yeah, through the chair, yeah, about 640 would get us all the way.
At the far end? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think this is
through the chair, Representative Drummond. The project they're referring to is it A to A? I think is what
right.
they call that.
Right.
That rail from Alberta, I think the location of the right of way of this, I believe we provided you a map in your packet. The location of the right of way was moved to the other side of the Tanana River due to the terrain, and you know down. Towards the Delta Junction area on the north side of the river, you get in some pretty hilly, up and down, lots of country mm-hmm. like that. And then, mm-hmm. of course, on the south side of the river, because of the outslope of the Alaska Range, reasonably flat. You know, not too many terrain changes that mm-hmm. they would mm-hmm. deal with. So I think that selection was probably very purposeful, a little more user friendly towards rail lines, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and. Just follow up. The article on the A2A rail says approximately 200 miles in Alaska of a 1,700-mile line, 200 miles to reach the rail system at North Pole. So it sounds like this would take care of roughly 80 miles of that?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Great. I can be supportive of this.
Representative Story.
So it sounds like the next steps are trying to get funds for the project. And I don't know if you have any other next steps to talk about, but I was wondering, and I see that you have the EIS permitted. How is plans communicating going with other people who would be influenced like this? I think about people who own land around their tribes, any communication with interested parties.
Through the chair, Representative Story, you know, the biggest part of this when it crosses the Tanana River is actually on military reserve, which is the name of the actual
Tanana Flats.
I'm sorry, okay. The Tanana Flats military reserve, most of that. The one piece that we're aware of that would be private property, I believe, is owned by Otna down near the river crossing near Delta Junction. And then most of the rest of almost all of the property is on government-owned land.
Follow up. So what is the communication with Otna about this?
That, through the chair, Representative Story, we have spoken to the railroad, and the railroad has discussed this previously with Otna, and there will continue to have discussions with Otna. It would be best not to route around that, although that could be a possibility. It wouldn't be the best thing to do. So they have been, it's been in discussion, I'm told, in the past with the Alaska Railroad.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, I will ask one or two that haven't been asked, although most of them have been asked that I was thinking of. So currently the tracks go over the bridge, over the newly constructed bridge, and stop in the Army training grounds there. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And you mentioned the river, the water near Delta. The other, what's the river that the pipeline goes
over?
The
Little in? Delta.
Little, Many. Mr. Both Chair, rivers. The,
Tanana, I guess.
It crosses, the pipeline crosses the Tanana.
Pipeline crosses the Tanana, yes, sir.
So there'd be another bridge?
No.
But no, you wouldn't have to?
No, it would, I believe, Mr. Chair, that the bridge would cross the Delta River.
Oh, okay.
Down there,
okay.
The one that comes in. It's one of those Alaska things, the one that flows to the north.
Yeah, the okay. So that would be the other, obviously, there's other construction needing to be done, but if the federal government wants to put in the infrastructure money, and this would tie in nicely to the A2A project. Yeah, sounds great. How are the missile components brought to Fort Greeley now? On truck, I guess? Or in the dark of night, we don't know.
Mr. Chair,
I can tell you. They're brought up by, they're shipped up.
Tom, you have details.
My name is Thomas Studler, for the record. I am staff for Representative Tallarico, and through the chair, the way the missiles are brought up currently today, they're brought up on barge freight, then they're placed on a rail, they're put on a rail to Fairbanks, they're taken off the rail, disassembled, put onto trucks, shipped down to Greeley, reassembled, and then stored. If this were done through the rail, it would go about 2 days faster, and they would go straight to the base, assembled, which would mean less traffic on the Richardson Highway, sir.
Yeah. I haven't passed any missiles lately, but I'm sure they're getting there somehow. I'm going to open this for public testimony right now. Anyone online for public testimony? Seeing nobody?
I signed up.
And my next question is, anybody in the room for public testimony? I don't see you on the list.
I know the drill. Speak to Joe Kennedy.
Hold on one sec. Oi. Brief at ease. She's just getting this. And we're back, and we have a public testifier. If you can identify yourself, and go ahead.
Vicki Joe Kennedy. My home is Kodiak Island, but I'm currently living in Juneau for the past 16 months. Well, where do we begin? That's a lot of money for a train, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be any passengers riding that train. The DOD has to pay for this, no ifs, ands, or buts, not one dime from this state, because it's for their purposes. The silo field is what it is and where it is now at Fort Greedy, and I did say greedy, and I do not know to this day why we keep putting all our eggs in one basket. One strike and they're all gone. We need to spread them out. We've already talked about this. I've talked about it with the Adjutant General, but as far as this rail goes, not one dime should we pay for this. We are broke. We can't afford it. And it's a DOD project, you know, the Fort Greeley, as it was before, it was always a military site, so it's their baby. Let them pay for it. And also, they're going to be tapping into that gas line that's coming out of Fairbanks. Let them kick in more money. Our good President Trump just put in another $55 billion for defense spending. Let's use some of it. It's there for our asking. It's up to the House and the Senate to get this money. I know you can do it, but it's definitely got to come out of their budget, not ours. We're broke. That's all there is to it. I had one other question. I will be looking up Article 7, though. The estimate on it, I believe I heard $184 million. Is that correct? Just for the 70 miles? I could be off. I heard a couple of two different. The one was billions, $17 billion. I don't know. It's just a lot of numbers being thrown out, and this state is broke, and we absolutely cannot do this. We are militarizing this state so fast. They currently own 65% of the land in the state of Alaska. The federal government does. Less than 1% belongs to the public, period. So seems like they're going to claim it all. Let them pay for all this, every single dime. I'm not happy about any of it. And the EIS was already done. I want to know when the EIS was done. That was a little sneak in. Or did you throw down 9545? That's an executive order. Look that one up. Thanks, Bill. I'm not happy because all this came home to roost in Kodiak.
Okay.
And thank God they didn't put the silo fields there. They wanted to put three of them on us, but they didn't because we fought it as hard as we could. But okay. As far as this money goes coming from the state of Alaska, negative. Let it come out of the DOD budget, especially the MDA budget. That'd be the Missile Defense Agency.
Thank you for your testimony.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Seeing no more testifiers in the room or online, I will close public testimony. To address the issue of cost, the fiscal note on this is zero. It is all federal money as proposed, so no state dollars are going towards this project. With that, we will set this resolution aside for now, and we will have a presentation by the U.S. Coast Guard. I think that's what we're doing this one, right?
Hey.
Yes. So we'd like to invite Rear Admiral Matthew Bell up, and we'll take a brief at ease to set up the presentation. And we're back, and we have Rear Admiral Matthew Bell, Jr. from the United States Coast Guard presenting. If you could identify yourself, sir, and continue your presentation, or start your presentation.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair, and committee members. So my name is Matthew Bell. I'm Rear Admiral, United States Coast Guard, the District 17 Commander. So all Coast Guard resources in and around the state of Alaska are under my purview. So good morning or good afternoon now. Just a few comments on the for you in regards to Coast Guard activities in and around the state, especially in regards to the Alaska Marine Highway System. Obviously, our marine transportation system is vital to national security. With diversification of domestic energy production, export markets, and demands on Arctic waters mean we need to move more people and more things by the water in a maritime need. The Coast Guard stands ready to meet these challenges because our national prosperity has always been closely linked to the maritime community. The Coast Guard in Alaska includes approximately 2,500 active duty, reserve, civilian, and auxiliary members, and most of those here in Alaska bring their dependents as well. That brings those numbers up to about 3,500. Dependents on the Alaska Marine Highway System for transportation in and out of the remote communities beyond our permanent change of station moves. Reduced transportation options in or out will obviously impact us desirably of movers to remote communities, and then many have limited flight options and, of course, at high cost. Just last year, the motor vessel Columbia had a fire down in Bellingham. Obviously, that impacted arrival of some of our members for almost up to 2 weeks. So we had 10 people that were directly affected by just this single casualty. From a search and rescue perspective, one of the Coast Guard's major missions, cruise ships present the highest risk for mass rescue operations in and around the state of Alaska, especially here in Southeast. Commercial airline crash, of course, being the second concern. Approximately 1.36 million tourists will arrive to Alaska on 34 different cruise ships, calling to Alaska over 500 times this year alone. Coast Guard lacks the organic resources capable of rescuing a large number of survivors in a timely and effective manner. Our search planners rely heavily on vessels of opportunity to assist with mass rescue operations. Alaska Marine Highway System vessels, due to their capability of holding large number of survivors, provide a valuable resource to the Coast Guard in responding to mass rescue operations and other high-capacity enabled units are scarce throughout the state. And I highlight three cases. Of course, most recent is the Viking Sky incident off of Norway. A few years back in Italy, the Costa Concordia grounded off of Italy. And then, of course, here in our own backwaters off of Yucatan was the Princeton Dam, required evacuation of the entire crew. From an Alaska Shield perspective, which is a triennial state-sponsored exercise, the Coast Guard is conducting Pelagic Strike counterterrorism exercise in conjunction with Arctic Shield 19 to meet shared preparedness objectives. Exercise will test the Coast Guard's ability to mobilize specialized forces to Alaska to respond to a terrorism or homeland security threat on a vessel. Approximately 70 MSRT West personnel deployed small boats and other equipment from their home base in San Diego, California, via strategic airlift support to the Port of Alaska provided by NORTHCOM ALCOM. The City of Cordova, the State of Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, State DOT, Alaska Marine Highway, and other state and federal agencies have been integral to exercise planning. At the request of the Alaska's governor, District 17 coordinated the joint agency operations titled Salmon Run in order to detect and deter illicit activity on Alaska's marine transportation system, directly supporting Alaska's 2018 high-intensity drug threat area designation, or HIDA. The op focused on Alaska Marine Highway System and inter-island ferry traffic, since illegal narcotics are transported into and throughout Alaska via this mode of transportation. Building on Coast Guard intelligence and covert operations that initially started in 2014, this operation became the first multi-mission interagency operation coordinated between Districts 13 and 17 to focus on these priorities and successfully utilize units and capabilities of such diversity. In 2018, three Operation Salmon Runs were conducted in the ports of Ketchikan, Juneau, Whittier, and Kodiak. These ops screened 30 ferry port calls, approximately 3,000 passengers, and over 500 crew members, and over 750 vehicles, resulting in the confiscation of 56 grams of heroin, an ounce of methamphetamines, almost 2 pounds of non-commercial marijuana, and alterants to taint your analysis testing, i.e. synthetic urine, and diverted pharmaceuticals, illegal prescription Xanax drugs. Alaska Marine Highway System vessels are a lifeline for many vehicles and passengers that come to Southeast. With that, they fall under many different regulations for operations, safety, and security. The Coast Guard is responsible for every piece of the ship, from plans to installation to operations. We make sure it works right. Depending on the size and type of vessel, they can be dry docked as frequently as annually or as twice every 5 years. Most ships receive a full-scale annual inspection once a year, with three additional quarterly inspections to ensure that maintenance and operations is being kept following the manual. Emergency drills and crew knowledge play a large part in all of our inspections. Anytime something breaks or someone is hurt, we attend the vessel to conduct a marine casualty investigation. The purpose of the investigation is to find out what happened and make sure that it doesn't happen again. The crews of the vessels are all licensed mariners with a Coast Guard Merchant Mariner's license. The Marine Transportation Security Act puts a good deal of responsibility for the safe and secure operations of passenger terminals on the operator. They are required to ensure that training, documentation, plans, communications, and access control ensure the safe operations of those terminals. Terminals and ships both have similar sets of security rules that overlap to ensure harmonized efforts between the ship and shore to protect both the ship and the terminal. The Coast Guard ensures that all plans and aspects of operations encompass all ports or all parts of the Maritime Transportation Security Act. The security plan is reviewed and required to be approved by the captain of the port. Compliance with the plan is demonstrated through an annual inspection and the addition of random spot checks throughout the year. And pending your questions, Mr. Chairman, that's all of my presentation.
Thank you, Rear Admiral Bell. Are there any questions from committee members? Co-Chair Stutes.
Thank you, Admiral Bell. I certainly appreciate you being here and coming from a community that has the largest Coast Guard base there is, as well as a huge fishing fleet that depends greatly on our Coast Guard. I doubly appreciate the fact that you're here, and I doubly appreciate what the Coast Guard does. But as I said, having the largest Coast Guard base there is, how large of a part would you guess that the Alaska Marine Highway System plays in that specific area in moving people in and out as they get their orders to come and go out of Kodiak?
Madam Co-Chair, that's so great question. So there's about 1,500 people in Kodiak, and I would say a third of them rotate out every year. Rough estimate. So there could be 600 to 800 folks moving in or out of the island. A good portion of those will use commercial shipment of their vehicle, will be shipped in from shipping port from the lower 48 into Kodiak, and then they'll fly in. And then another smaller portion will take the Alaska Marine Highway, and others will drive. I can't say the whole way, because you've got to get off in, you know, Homer or Whittier to make that last final trip.
And so, get on the Alaska Marine Highway system.
Alaska Marine Highway. And so the actual numbers vary from year to year. Last year, I think the numbers were 300 off the top of my head. But I can get you a more confirmed number if you need that.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And it sounds as if your people in Southeast depend quite heavily on it as well, on their transfers in and out as well.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And I think that the folks in Southeast actually rely on a little more because of the close proximity from where they get on in Bellingham to come Southeast. It's not such a time commitment to get here to whereas they're going to go all the way to Kodiak. That's cross Gulf. That's an additional 3 to 5 days worth of transit. And folks plan that as part of their move because that's technically coming out of their pocket for that time that it takes to get from one duty station to the next. Southeast is much easier. It doesn't take such a large commitment of time.
I have another question. One more,
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Did I hear during your presentation that you said that the Alaska Marine Highway System was integral in your search and rescues as well, that you depend on that?
Yes, ma'am. So you heard that correctly. So all our search and rescue planners try to keep track on all the large vessels going in and around, especially here in Southeast. The Alaska Marine Highway is the only large capacity resource that we'd be able to call upon for given mass rescue operations.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions all around. Representative Story, next.
Yes. I was wondering if you had communication with Governor about the importance of the Alaska Marine Highway to search and rescue efforts.
So no, ma'am. I've not had the question posed to him directly. I've met him in handshake only up at the YMCA salute to the military, and that was the only interactions I've had with him since he's come into office.
Follow up,
Representative
Thank you. Yes, to me, seeing how critical it is, do you have plans to reach out with a letter or however you communicate to share that?
So I've got a number of standing requests to try to get to meet him, have asked him to come to my office as well as to get to him. Just the partnerships that the Coast Guard, Federal Coast Guard has with the state is just is an incredible connection. We've got to make that connection. I'd rather get to know him now than given a complex contingency that we all seem to face on a recurring basis as needed.
Thank you. And that goes along with, have you talked to Commissioner McKinnon about the relationship and partnership between Coast Guard and...
Okay. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions and then a remark. If I could start on slide number 2, you referred to... personnel utilizing the Marine Highway System for PCS. What does PCS stand for?
Permanent change of station. So all our folks coming in or going out personal change in station. However, I use that number because we track that. Mm-hmm. What I don't track is the amount of folks that use Alaska Marine Highway for normal day-to-day, week-to-week business. So, you know, when I lived in Kodiak, you know, you would take a trip every couple of months, whether that was to do Kenai or get all the way to Anchorage. Mm-hmm. But those the Coast Guard doesn't track. I own the PCS orders, so we can track those in the system, mm-hmm. so I know how many are coming and going. Mm-hmm.
So follow up. So you're referring to, you're not tracking the personal or casual travel of members, and it looks like the Coast Guard pays approximately $500,000 a year for the utilization of PCS.
Yes, ma'am.
That's a pretty substantial bit of revenue. Mr. Chairman, additional definition request.
Representative
on slide number four, organic. The Coast Guard lacks organic high capacity vessels. What do you mean by organic?
So the there's no large recovery platform in the Coast Guard inventory. So especially here in Southeast, we have a couple of 110-foot patrol boats, the mm-hmm. two fast response cutters in Ketchikan, and those you could perhaps get 20 to 25 people on the decks mm-hmm. during a mm-hmm. mass recovery evolution. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there'd be nowhere to put those folks once you start recovering them out of lifeboats or out of the
right.
water.
Right. Follow up. Okay. And I really appreciate you bringing to the attention of the committee that you lack vessels with the ability to handle large numbers of survivors. I know the ferries, I know when you look at the specs on the ferries there, the larger ones can each handle approximately 500 passengers and I think a couple hundred in cabins. But I'm sure that's for extended trips and an emergency basis. They could probably handle more. And because I've been here too late, too many seasons, I've collected some data on the cruise ships that visit here. And last summer, the Norwegian Bliss came to Southeast Alaska for the first time, and it's got a capacity of just over 6,000 passengers and crew. That, to me, that's absolutely remarkable. And that would take a lot of runs, even with the largest marine highway vessel, to offload all those, to transfer all those passengers from a ship in crisis. So I really think this is really important stuff, and I appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
That's great. And I would ask that I know we've had the Alaska Marine Highway System ferries involved in rescue cases in the past. On a much smaller scale, of course, fishing boat going down. And I wrote myself a note, I'll get the committee numbers on how many cases that we've actually called upon. Even just with the loss of the Guardian flight just this past year, mm-hmm. Just a couple months back, they came in and as they transited through the area. So that type of assistance occurs routinely. Picking up folks, picking up passengers from smaller fishing vessels that have gone is a data you should probably have. I'll get that to you.
Thank you.
Representative Clayman.
Just a follow-up on Representative Stute's question about marine highway assets that are available. I take it that because the marine highway is state-owned as the Coast Guard, you have the ability to essentially say, send this ship over, we need it now, and that's some of the authority you have as Coast Guard, but you don't have that authority as to any of the cruise ships.
Correct. That's correct.
And Follow up. Would that same authority extend if the Marine Highway were being run by a private enterprise and was no longer a state enterprise?
So good question. I'll have to get back to you on the actual authorities. We actually run a program called AMVER, which is, you know, we ask for assistance from industry, and it's on a volunteer nature, and we do this typically with Great Circle Route, so large Pacific Ocean Transit. So we ask those vessels when we come up with a search and rescue case that's in close proximity to them, they've actually volunteered to be hailed. They don't have to deviate from the course. Most of them usually do. We would likely do the same with the cruise ship industry. If we had a large mass rescue operation, we'd call them. Whether they'd be obligated to help or not would be a different topic.
Thank you.
Sure.
Representative Story.
Thank you. So I know how important safety is in following regulations on board, and I'm wondering what the U.S. Coast Guard asks of the ferry system as far as staffing and what to have on board while they are operating.
So I don't know those numbers off the top of my head, but our marine inspectors that do those visits have those requirements and what they are, depending on the length and size of the vessel, how many passengers they would be carrying, what type of cargo they would be doing. Each one of those would guarantee or require a specific crew and crew complement and particular set of licensing for the crew. And we have, and the prevention department for us would, or for the Coast Guard would have those. I could get those numbers to you.
Thank you.
Let's see, Rear Admiral Bell, what in your presentation, there's no mention of the, unless I missed it, Trans-Alaskan terminal and terminus in Valdez, and I assume you guys are there?
We are, yes,
okay.
Sir.
And that's largely a security. What's your mission in Valdez? I didn't see it on your map of the salmon run. So.
Yeah, yes. Yes, sir. So today's presentation was on the Alaska Marine Highway System. So there are a number of other maritime transportation security safety initiatives throughout the state. The terminus for the Alaska Marine Highway is a piece of that. Each of the facilities, port facilities across the state where commercial traffic would come in is another site security that we would do. For containerized traffic, we partner with CBP and Customs to ensure the integrity of that material coming in and out. In Valdez itself, so we work with Alyeska for port security. We do routine exercises with them and drills. Station Valdez does active patrols. There's a secure area that's outside the port terminal that we continue to monitor in conjunction with Alyeska. We have a vessel traffic service that monitors traffic in Valdez itself, as well as all the approaches in through Hinchinbrook up through Prince William Sound.
And of course, there's a ferry terminal there as well.
There is.
And I don't know if there's. I'm sure they would help too if needed.
They would.
And there are cruise ships in Valdez anymore?
No, I don't believe there's. Okay. We've got any port calls in Valdez.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was invited to witness the spill cleanup practice drill in out of Whittier last mm-hmm. summer,
right.
and Representative Josephson was also on this. They didn't talk about the ferries' involvement at the time, and they were demonstrating the new equipment that Alyeska had contracted with for Prince William Sound spill cleanup capabilities. But wasn't one of the ferries built to carry spill cleanup equipment, maybe two of them, I think. I don't know if Admiral Bell knows this part. I thought it was the Kennecott. Maybe that would I think the spill cleanup component might be something else the committee might want to consider getting some more information on, because it's not exactly in your purview.
So it is and it isn't. So that mm-hmm. so U.S. Coast Guard partners with Alaska DEC for spill response. Mm-hmm. We have staged equipment throughout the state in a number of the maritime communities. If we needed to move it from storage location to the actual on scene event, we would be looking for, I'll call it, commercial transportation of that. But if the marine highway were available to make that, it's all containerized, put on the back mm-hmm. of a truck, and it's off and running. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's the connection to Alaska Marine Highway to do that. But you'd need the ability to get it off the ferry when it gets there. So mm-hmm. there would be limited ports that it would right. be able to go to.
Right.
Lack of road system for most of the maritime community, especially Western Alaska, mm-hmm. makes it difficult for any of that. It's going to be mm-hmm. barge traffic and then offloaded by hand once it gets there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And kind of go back on that. So vessels of opportunity is the term that we use mm-hmm. For folks that we would hire to help with a spill cleanup. That's typically the fishing fleet that's usually home ported in and around where the accident would occur. And the Alaska Marine Highway, although would be viable, but there's a whole, to take that out of the commercial nexus for them to continue their runs, there's a cost to that as well, and that would have to be balanced.
follow-up.
Yep.
You mentioned the vessels of opportunity. If I remember correctly, there are approximately, they're in the neighborhood of 400 to 500 that the spill coordination crew has on tap for assistance in the event of a spill in the Prince William Sound area. And I think they range all the way out to Kodiak.
They do.
Potentially.
They do. As all as a result of Exxon Valdez, they go from Prince William Sound out to, out past Cordova and on the east side and then to Kodiak on the west.
Great.
Any further questions?
No, I just have a comment.
Comment? Any comments? Representative Stutes.
Yes, I have a comment. I just want to say thank you. I represent all coastal communities, and we have Coast Guard in Kodiak and in Cordova, and we value you, and we are my communities. Thank you for your service. We really appreciate it. We treasure our Coast Guard.
Well, on behalf of the men and women of the Coast Guard, thank you. So it's difficult. It's always awkward to kind of go, well, is that
right?
Okay? We really do thank. Most of us enjoy what we do, and we love it even more to be in Alaska doing that work. So thank you.
Representative Story.
Yes, I too would really want to express my appreciation. Coast Guard is integral to life in Juneau and across Alaska, so thank you for your hard work. I see the Liberty the most because I live out in Ock Bay on the uphill side, and when I walk, I always wave down that walkway. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you. I hope they wave back.
Anyone else? Well, I will close this meeting. I will say also thank you for all that you guys do. I went to the community of Kodiak with Representative Stutes summer before last and had a tour of the Coast Guard base,
correct? Yep. So there's a number of units there. So Base Kodiak is the physical. They own the property and the buildings and the housing. Air Station Kodiak is the principal operational component that's there, about 300 people. 6860 helicopters, the rotary wing,
yeah, that's
three rotary wing 65s plus the new C-130Js, and then there's two large ships tied up there, Douglas Monroe, Alex Haley, Pierside, plus Cutter Spar is the buoy tender, and then a couple other smaller units.
Yeah, we had a great tour down there.
Great.
And my daughter was in Juneau skiing this past weekend, and her coach, who I didn't know too well, I rode up on the chairlift with him, and I said, what brought you up here? We chatted, and he was 10 years in the Coast Guard in Kodiak, I believe. So, and lastly, I had a very good friend on the Prinsen Dam who endured that, and I don't know if you were here then. But
Thanks, but no. A little bit before my time, so to that, sir.
But, you mentioned it in your presentation, and I appreciate
that. That's great. I appreciate that.
Representative Story.
Yes, I do also want to thank all the employees in the Coast Guard for what they do for the communities where they're stationed in, oftentimes volunteer work, just, again, so involved in the community. So know so many people who have given so much and are doing that now. So thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing no further comments, that concludes our business for today. Thank you, Admiral Bell, and the rest of the Coast Guard members that are here today. Our next meeting on Thursday is not going to happen. There's no meeting on April 4th, so we will adjourn next Tuesday, April 9th, and the time is 1:52, and the meeting's adjourned.